Yeah, and we're looking forward to season two. I hope that season one would be such a torpedo into the face of AI that it would all be over.
The final nail in the coffin, yeah.
Somehow it survived our attack. Hopefully it can't take the second salvo.
No, exactly. I mean, we have assembled...
Fugitive decolonial Luddite...
So, surely that'll be enough. Welcome to Politics, a show where two software developers break the fourth wall and talk about the interlacing of technology and politics. I'm Josh.
And I'm Ray. We see technologies like crypto, AI, and surveillance infecting our politics. Meanwhile, governments and the media are making out that all this is inevitable. We can't leave the future in the hands of scheming technology leaders and their pet politicians.
We're here to raise our voice and open up the space for honest, good faith discussions. To help us organize and sharpen our ideas, we've invited some interesting and highly respected thinkers to share their understanding and their research with us and, of course, with you.
Politics is where we smash the myths and get to the truth.
Ray, we still need to talk about AI.
Yeah, we do. This is turns out that we're ongoing. This is an ongoing problem that isn't suddenly based on the back of our mega series. Actually, you know, reacting to it and all falling apart. So, I think what we need to do is we need to gather out more forces.
Yeah.
Clearly, the two of us and Chris and Brian aren't quite enough. So let's gather more forces. Let's organize more.
Let's do it, Ray. Let's do it. So why are we still talking about AI? At the end of last season, we talked a little bit about the AI bubble and, you know, how this has to burst. So when is it going to burst? And unfortunately, in the intervening time, the industry has really doubled down on keeping this bubble inflated, right? So
yeah.
We had that big investment by SoftBank in OpenAI. We had these weird circular deals where, let's see, Oracle is going to sell data center capacity to OpenAI, who is going to pay them, and then Microsoft is going to do this and that. And, like, you know, this is just pure nonsense, right? And, you know, like people like Ed Zetron have done fantastic work digging into this. And, you know, it'd be lovely to have Ed on the show. We have reached out, but Ed is a busy man. So if any of our listeners know Ed and want to vouch for us, that would be greatly appreciated. So that's one aspect. The bubble is still going, Ray.
Yeah, I think the problem with the bubble is that normally with bubbles, it kind of stays within a particular sector, like crypto.
Right,
didn't escape the tech sector, really. Things like cloud did escape the tech sector.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, the cloud platform stuff tends to be almost a kind of background thing.
Yeah.
It's something that is almost like an implementation detail, let's say. I know that it's more than that, but from everyday people's perspective, it's not something that's like affecting their daily lives. It doesn't matter. And also it doesn't matter for the kind of government spending plans. It doesn't matter for our retirement schemes.
Right.
It's not contagious, as it were, into the real economy or into people's real lives. Whereas we're seeing with this bubble that it is becoming highly contagious. Basically, at this point, the American economy is riding on this bubble.
I know.
And it's not just the American economy. There are many governments around the world, many treasuries that are betting a lot of money on this stuff.
Right.
And this is, I would say, unprecedented in terms of bubbles, because the whole world is spending money on it. Money is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think money is, let's say, an abstract resource that when it all goes away, we can all get hurt by money going away.
Mm-hmm.
but also it can just kind of fizzle out. Money can be fixed, as it were. The problem with this thing is that it's actually consuming real life resources. We're betting the entire planet on this thing. You know, we're betting the entire economic goal of the planet. We're betting the electricity. We're betting the water. It really is an amazing, unprecedented bubble, I think.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you know, speaking of kind of betting energy and water, so one of the interviews we have coming up this season is with Aurora Gomez Delgado from the Spanish organization called Tu Nube Seca Mi Rio, which, Ray, obviously your Spanish is top drawer, so you know that means your cloud is drying my river. And so in that interview, we discussed with her the real impacts of data centers on not only the larger scale electricity and water use and so on, but also the impact on local communities. And that conversation was really great, I thought.
Yeah, very much so. And it does ground a lot of this abstract stuff in reality about what is really going on in local communities. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking to her about stuff in Europe, but also we know these things happening in the global south.
Yeah.
And they're happening all over. You know, we can see the effect of electricity prices all over the world. You know, it really is amazing to me. This to me feels like a forcing function when people's, you know, real energy costs are going up and their inability to get drinking water. These things should, I feel like they should be causing street riots.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's coming, I think.
Yeah, it's coming. It's definitely coming. So there are a few other things that are kind of going on and I would say have been intensifying since the end of season one. So we have these kind of AI-justified layoffs that are accelerating. We think that the idea of AI replacing jobs is kind of ludicrous, but at the same time, you know, it is very real in terms of executives are using AI as a justification. So we have that. We have another way AI is kind of taking your job. And Brian Merchant has done a series on this called AI Killed My Job. The point he's making there is that okay, AI is eliminating some jobs, or at least AI is being used as a weapon to eliminate some jobs, but it is definitely shitifying a lot of jobs. So jobs like, for example, translation, digital art, we have AI features just creeping into more and more products. Search, if you do a Google search these days, you get the AI nonsense there at the top. Actually, quick pro tip, if you include minus AI in your Google search at the end, like at least you don't get that bullshit. Whether it's running it through an LLM, who knows? And then we have increasing chatbot usage among professionals. So, you know, you have these slop proposals flying around at work. You have slop performance reviews, you know, managers using LLMs to give performance reviews, which are probably written, you know, the employees are probably writing their own self-review with LLMs. In education, you have using this for lesson planning, assignment design and grading reports, all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So all of this is happening, Ray, but AI is increasingly unpopular in every survey, like of the general public that we see coming out. So like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, it's almost like there are a bunch of billionaires and influencers, but who are basically the billionaire elites doing things that are against the majority interests. Who knew that this could happen under a capitalist system?
Who indeed? Okay, so, you know, we had all of these conversations in season one, most of them just between the two of us. And, you know, we kind of talked through what the problems with AI that we saw were. And you did a clever thing that I think is very helpful here. You kind of created this backronym, Hellish AI. The H is for hyperscaled, so using this massive amount of resources for training and inference.
Yeah.
E for expansive. These models are like general purpose, supposedly they can do everything, which makes thinking about how they can be used safely basically impossible, right?
Yes.
So then you have L for large, and it's more like massive or gargantuan, really.
Yeah.
Then the second L is for language model. And this is a language model that's been trained on the entire internet, including some of the nastiest, most disgusting parts of the internet. Mm. I know Chris Gilliard pointed to that the very fact that there's child sexual abuse material used in the training data set just disqualifies LLMs as a technology that we should be engaging with.
Yes.
Totally agree. Then you have the I for imperial. So, you know, this is a technology and a political project that wants to rule the world. And Karen Howell's great Empire of AI really goes into this. Mm-hmm. Finally, you have the S for sucks. It's sucking all the electricity and water, but also all of the air out of the room. It's all we can talk about.
Right.
Hence this podcast. And then the final H, human suffering, right? So in order to make these machines safe for the tender eyes of the global north, we are inflicting all of this suffering on the global majority, the global south. So hellish AI, hyperscaled, expansive, large, language model, imperial, sucks, human suffering. Ray, I love it. I mean, I don't love it, but I love the backronym. So this is the hellish AI. And one of the things we want to do with the season is talking with other people to bring all of these other perspectives.
Yeah.
The question we ultimately want to answer is, like, can this technology be redeemed? Can any part of this technology be redeemed? Is there a way to use it, you know, for the social good instead of making all of our lives worse? So let's talk about then some of the interviews that we have lined up for this season. First up, and I think it's very apropos to just kick off season two, you know, since we just went through hellish AI and all the problems, kick it off with a good dose of hate, right to the vein, some hate. We interviewed Anthony Moser, who wrote this great essay, I think in the summer of last year, but it's called I Am an AI Hater. So that conversation, Ray, maybe you want to give a quick preview of what we talked about in that and how that went.
I think a few things. I think, first of all, I think Anthony is a very, very thoughtful person.
He's
a very smart guy.
Yeah.
He expresses his opinions really clearly, I think. Mm-hmm. His essay is beautifully concise. But the main thing that I took away from it was the fact that the technology is rude. And we are permitted to also be rude about it and about the people that make it.
Right.
It's a way of rethinking our positions, that politeness and respectability aren't things that the purveyors of this stuff care about.
Right.
And so we need to be very clear that we should not be polite about the technology or its users either. Mm-hmm. People say, oh, it's the next models. I'm only using it for this. I'm only using it for that.
Right, right.
I think one has to deal with the people around us. Because the thing about this, it's a multi-level marketing scheme at the moment.
Yeah, it is. Know? It's not an LLM. It's an MLM.
Yeah. There's definitely people at the top, you know, the Altmans and the people who go on the sort of big shows and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Those definitely deserve the hatred of a thousand fires, for sure. But what happens is that there are a whole bunch of minions acting in the real world to try and promote this stuff. The very people in schools that are promoting LLMs, the very people at work and the bosses. So I feel like we are, you know, we have to be rude and we have to face up to those people in our actual lives. Mm-hmm. We can't just address the sort of faraway people.
Yeah.
And I think Anthony is clear about that in the conversation about using essentially a framing context through which you have to discuss these things when they impact your real life.
Yeah.
And it was a really fascinating conversation. He's a very charming guy, a very thoughtful person, you know, and I think it's a great way to start off the series.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things he says, and he kind of has developed this line of thought a little further, but one of the things he says is, you know, the conversation around AI is, and here I mean the conversation with the people around us that you were mentioning,
yeah,
the zombie hordes, if you will. The conversation is often framed as like, is this stuff useful, right? The zombies are saying, oh, this stuff is so useful for everything. And what Anthony is saying is that we need to avoid falling into the trap of just arguing with them that, oh, no, actually, it isn't useful. And he says, just go straight to AI is a powerful tool for oppression, genocide, and fascism. Hmm. Is that a tool you want to use? And I'll throw this in the show notes, but he wrote another essay called The Kirby Frame, where he goes more into detail about how when people come with this bullshit frame, you have to get outside of that and think about, okay, what are they really trying to accomplish? Yeah, so like you said, brilliant way to kick off the season. The next interview we have after that is the one that I mentioned before with Aurora, looking at data centers.
The thing that I really liked about the Aurora interview was that she centers it around community, around people, and she talks around things that matter to real individuals. And I think this is, again, to your point about framing, this is the thing that we need to talk about.
Yeah.
This stuff is not harmless. It's not neutral. This stuff is coming at us and it's producing actual real harms in a whole variety of places and a whole variety of ways that are truly shocking. Aurora brings a lot of that home for me.
Yeah, it was a fantastic interview for sure. So then we have another interview, and this one was very serendipitous. So we were having a conversation in our backstage group, and somebody just shared something that they had found on Blue Sky. So this science fiction and fantasy writer named Foz Meadows had written this piece called Against AI. What triggered that was the Nebula Awards were coming up. There are kind of two big awards for science fiction and fantasy. One is the Hugo Awards, the other is the Nebula Awards. So the Nebula Awards committee had put out a statement basically saying, like, you can't use AI in your submissions for the Nebula Awards. And then this kind of pundit in the science fiction and fantasy community writes this weird piece basically pushing back against this and saying, you know, a bit of a moral panic argument, right? Wasn't it? You know, think of the poor writers.
Oh, yeah.
What if the publishing houses use a AI grammar correcting tool somewhere in the process and they're eliminated and blah, 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 blah. So Foz, speaking of hate, and Foz, you know, is a Strayan, and he was just like, nah, mate, fuck all that, and just like go straight for the jugular. So that conversation, Ray, like, what did you take away from our long conversation with Foz?
It was a very long conversation, yeah. Again, I think Foz is fire.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think he's got a lot of great points. And again, a lot of it is framed around the fact that this technology is coming at people in all walks of life, in all kinds of ways that are shocking. But again, very focused on the human effects he was concerned about, writing, of course, but also about education.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, a very good conversation, very articulate, very thoughtful. And I think we had a good discussion about the fact that although science fiction writers might not get us out of this hellhole, they've got some good things to say about it.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting way to kind of frame a lot of the sci-fi stuff that is being used sort of against us, as it were, you know, in service of this AI, to think about that, to reframe that also in terms of how you can use this technology of sci-fi, let's call it, in the other direction.
Yeah. And while we're speaking about sci-fi, we did another interview, and again, another piece of serendipity here. I was listening to the Adnan Hussein show, and Adnan is this amazing, he's an academic who looks a lot at the Islamic world and the history of the Mediterranean around the time of the Crusades. But he was having an interview with this guy, Dr. Sayed Mustafa Ali, on a paper that Dr. Ali had written called A Butlerian Hauntology. I think any Dune fans in our argument would have pricked up their ears and said, a Butlerian what now? And in fact, the paper is about the Butlerian Jihad, which is the like backstory in Dune that explains why there are no digital computers in the Dune universe. So they have these human computers called Mentats who are kind of trained to do, you know, effectively binary logic and execute computer programs in their minds. But, you know, Dr. Ali, the point that he makes here, what you were just talking about with Foz Meadows and the kind of science fiction fantastical storylines being used as like a weapon against us, Dr. Ali is like, well, we actually need to, you know, not just kind of wave that away, but we need to engage directly with those sci-fi storylines. So we talked to him about this Butlerian jihad. First of all, what is it? Where did it come from? And then, you know, why not have a real life Butlerian jihad? So that, Ray, I mean, that conversation, I know you really enjoyed it personally as a wordy man, a man who loves words. So,
well, yeah, I mean, Mustafa had one over on me in many ways. The guy that episode is a download of a lot of knowledge.
Yeah. In fact, we might have to make it a two-parter because it was epic in length as well as content.
Yeah, and the footnotes are going to be absolutely incredible.
I actually had to, sorry, Ray, just to go on a tiny tangent. We've written a transcript editor to use with the show. And because of the sheer number of footnotes or show notes in that episode, I actually had to go and implement a new feature to deal with with show notes in a better way. So,
yeah, no, it was a fascinating conversation. I mean, Mustafa, he's got an incredible intellect.
Oh, God,
expresses himself incredibly well, and it was a fascinating. To be honest, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of perspectives on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to bring a lot of them together so that our listeners can have an appreciation of different sides of the way that we think about AI. And he really brought a lot of thinking around AI together for me.
Oh, yeah.
It's really interesting that he wrote this Butlerian ontology. I think it was last year. That paper, I would say, in the end, resolves a lot of the kind of threads and loose thoughts that we've been having over the past several years. I would say he's a really powerful agent of refinement of thinking. He really does bring together a lot of these threads in a very convincing way. So yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting episode for people to hear about, to listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking forward to listen to it and inform myself again.
Oh my goodness,
because it was an amazing ride while we were interviewing him. So it would be nice to listen to it again so I can more fully understand all of his points.
Yeah.
So I can imagine we have to do that on loop a few times.
Absolutely. As of this recording, we just talked to Dr. Ali, last Sunday.
Yeah.
And I just finished reading through the transcript and making my edit notes to do the rough cut. And Ray, oh my goodness. I mean, like you said, I'm going to have to read the transcripts about two more times just in the normal course of the production of the episode. And I'll probably listen to the episode about two more times. But then I think I want to come back about 3 months from now and then listen to it again. I mean, this is, it is a veritable masterpiece of, like you said, pulling together all of these seemingly disparate threads and weaving them into this tapestry of like, hey, this is exactly what's going on here.
Yeah.
What a conversation. We talked to Foz, who's a writer. We talked to Dr. Ali, who is a critical computing scholar, but of course we talked to him about science fiction. So yeah, and as you mentioned when we were talking about Foz actually brought up some really interesting points about how LLMs are having this big negative impact on education.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the points that I think Foz made, or something that's kind of obvious, is that children are quite literally our future, not in any kind of wishy-washy way. They fucking are, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Children are the future of the world. And so I think primary education, especially for me, has to be a site of struggle against this shit.
Absolutely.
I just want to tell you a quick story about a friend of mine who is a primary school teacher. And their school recently rolled out this AI policy. And, you know, whatever, this kind of sounds good on the face of it, the usual stuff about responsible use of AI, blah, blah, blah. But of course, the school has the usual kind of ed tech nonsense, you know, Google Classroom and all of this. So when they roll out an AI policy, this needs to be viewed with deep suspicion. So my friend was deeply suspicious. And so what they did, first of all, is they were like, okay, I'm going to send a reply to this email. Oh, sorry. Their kind of head of learning or whatever sent out this email saying, you know, we're rolling out this AI policy. We're going to have an all-staff meeting to talk about it. So my friend was like, okay, cool. I'm going to write an email and reply to this head of learning, just listing out some concerns I have as an educator, as a teacher. So my friend reaches out to me because they were familiar with the podcast. And they were like, okay, I have the following points that I want to hit. Will you please give me some really good resources, you know, just like a really concise article or something that explains this so that my words are not just like, oh, I think this, but it's more like I'm saying this and here's the research to back it up or whatever. So, of course, like we were delighted and we kind of went to our little group of Luddites in the backstage and asked for some resources. So my friend sends this email. And then in the meantime, unfortunately, a lot of teachers are using LLMs like ChatGPT because unfortunately, teachers kind of like doctors have to do a lot of bullshit work, right? But my friend was worried about this because not only were the teachers using the LLMs for their kind of bullshit work, but they were also using the LLMs for lesson planning. And my friend was like, no, this is terrible, right? Terrible for two reasons. First of all, they're generating what we call non-factual text, right? So are the lesson plans any good on the one hand? But also very worryingly, you know, my friend was worried, like, what is this doing to the actual teachers' brains? They will lose the ability to actually think critically about how to teach our children. So my friend has kind of been working on these teachers, and they've been laying out different arguments based on, you know, whatever that particular teacher cares about. So there's one teacher who is very concerned with social justice, especially trans rights. So, you know, my friend kind of had some talking points around that. There's another teacher who is from the Global South. So my friend points to what's happening in the Global South with data labeling and stuff we've talked about. So the long and short of it is, like, by the time this all staff meeting went out, my friend had actually recruited like three teachers as kind of fledgling Luddites. So what they were really doing is they were organizing on the ground IRL. Right. And this is what we've talked about before on the show. Individual action is not going to accomplish anything in the face of this stuff, but collective action can. And what you actually can do as an individual is start organizing and building up this collective action. So was my friend successful, you know, in their quest to like keep AI out of their school? Like, of course not. But there was one victory. The school's AI policy said, no LLM use in primary, full stop. So no LLMs in the classrooms in primary. So like that was huge. And unfortunately in secondary, and here I mean primary is kind of ages 5 through around 11, 12, and then secondary is kind of 12 through 18. So in secondary, unfortunately, the school is, you know, leaning into this narrative of, oh, we have to prepare the kids for, you know, life after school and like, you know, LLMs are inevitable, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I just really wanted to tell this story as a successful act of resistance by a Luddite educator. And, you know, obviously we are going to have an interview with an educator later in the season, a different person. Anyway, Ray, so yeah, I wanted to tell you that story.
I think that is a victory, actually. I mean, you say that they didn't succeed completely.
Right, exactly.
They kept it out of primary. I think keeping out of primary is already quite a big victory, actually.
Totally, totally. I agree. So, Ray, last year, I mean, I was aware of this book, but you were the first person to read it, and you know, during our kind of weekly walk and talk call, you were like, Josh, I just read this book. You need to buy it immediately. Like, as soon as we get off this call, buy this book and read it, and then we'll talk. Yeah. And I was like, all right, Ray. So, you know, what was that book and why were you so fired up to have me read it so we could discuss it?
Yeah, that was The Empire of AI.
Oh, yeah.
By Karen Howe. And it's an absolute... it's a masterpiece.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're talking about bringing threads together with Mustafa, but Karen was the OG thread bringer.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It's an interesting book because it sort of lures you in with a bit of a gossipy feel around how OpenAI got started and the kind of power players and stuff like this.
And the whole, like, kind of, you know, power play, like you said, of, like, removing Sam Altman as CEO, but then there's a rebellion, and then he's CEO again, and yeah.
I mean, it's there's a bit of, you know, there's a sort of bit of Hollywood gossip around the book, within the book. But yeah, I mean, but she brings up some amazing, but, you know, once we've kind of, like, weaving through all of that kind of stuff, is the development of this technology, is the fact that hyperscaling was a choice that they made, and that everybody essentially, on the back of a few surprising discoveries, that A, it did scale, and that B, when you scale it, it gets new capabilities that they didn't expect. Now, the fact that they got some capabilities they didn't expect, this is why people did start to think about that maybe there were potential things that could be unlocked. So they were really starting to huff their own puff, basically. You know, yeah, they were sort of consuming their own bullshit at this point.
Yeah, getting high on their own supply.
I mean, we're talking about fairly small, like, features that were unlocked, very academic features, and I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of all of those things.
But you don't want to talk about back propagation and convolutional neural networks. Sorry, and Ray, sorry, I'm accidentally teasing something, but we are going to have a conversation with a computer scientist who will explain how this technology really works. But to Karen, back to the Empire of AI.
Yes, back to the Empire. So, I mean, the point is that, like a lot of things, she describes how this technology moved from the research labs that were sort of, you know, in the doldrums for 20, 30 years, essentially, into this massive scaled out implementation that we see today. And she talks about, what she does, I think, which is really fascinating in that book, is she essentially talks about how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And when you look at that, of course, you know, nobody wants to know how the sausage is made.
No.
This book really does describe that.
And you really do not.
You really do not.
The book is horrifying. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah.
And again, what I like about Karen's book and about Karen in general is she's very focused on the effects on people.
Yes.
So that's where it all lands for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, bringing that all together, it was beautifully written. It was a mix of a sort of heady mix, if you like, of this sort of gossipy side of things. But she understands. She's a tech journalist, and she really is. She worked at she was like educated at MIT. She knows about technology, so she's not just a stenographer for the industry, as so many journalists are.
No, exactly.
No, she is a critical thinker, and it was an amazing book. I definitely had to get you reading it. You loved it.
I did.
And, you know, I've been a fanboy of Karen ever since.
Yeah. So we actually reached out to Karen's literary agent last season to see if we could maybe get her to come on the show. And, you know, it didn't work out last year, but the paperback edition of Empire of AI is actually coming out in May. And so we reached out again, and this time Karen and her publisher were like, yeah, that sounds like a fantastic idea to, you know, have Karen come on and, you can interview her about Empire of AI, and that, you know, that'll coincide with the release of the paperback. And, you know, and we were just like, oh, like, we'll do that interview, and then I can die a happy man, you know, like, that's that's going to be great.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is, I mean, she is such a great speaker. She and her thoughts have definitely evolved since the book as well, about the way that it's the effect of this empiric growth, basically. So it's going to be, I really think that's going to be an absolutely fascinating conversation.
Absolutely.
Fascinating episode. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah. You know, speaking of empire, when you think of empires, you think of anti-democratic, right? Autocratic, et cetera. And so we reconnected with our old friend, Dr. Anna Kolom, who is a political scientist and a researcher at an institute called the Data Tank, which really looks at the effects of data and how data is collected and used and so on our political establishments. And so we had a great conversation with Anna, really focused on democracy. So, you know, what is democracy? You know, we're not talking about the kind of liberal representative democracy as the only thing that democracy could be, but we're, you know, we're kind of expanding that a little wider. Another great conversation with Anna, who really, as we said in season one, that talk that Anna gave at Clojure Conference on the real dangers of AI was the thing that really kicked off Politics season one in a major way.
Yeah, definitely. I think Politics is the confluence of technology and politics, and democracy, how technology and the hellish AI affects democracy is an ongoing struggle. I mean, we talk about, you know, sites of struggle and the struggle for democracy. You know, we can see it in the news every week that elections are going to be stolen. You know, and I, like you say, even this is a paltry example of what democracy could be. So we explore all those various options about what democracy could be, but also how the advent of hellish AI is affecting democracy and what we can do, hopefully, to try and change the way that we use the political tools that we have available. And I think that was a really interesting discussion around, you know, the reality of what democracy is, what tools we can use, and how AI is affecting it. So yeah, definitely very, very much a needed conversation, a deep dive into that stuff. There's definitely more to be to talk about. We've got lots of ideas for season three, season four, and season five.
Yeah, hopefully.
Let's hope they're not needed.
Well, let's hope, let's hope they're not about AI. You know, come on, pump the buzzer.
Yeah.
So, you know, speaking about the political, in the kind of intro to our show, you know, one of the things we talk about is how big tech has put out this idea of, you know, technology is neutral and apolitical, and we need to have these apolitical workplaces. And I don't know where I read this, but somebody made the point that there are, you know, people in certain marginalized group whose very existence has been politicized. So when they come to work, they can't leave politics outside the workplace. And, you know, one of those groups is, of course, trans people.
Yeah, definitely. And we've also got quite a few trans members of the Backstage Politics. So we're kind of in touch with the queer, trans, LGBTQ plus community on an individual level as people, as individuals. But it's definitely very interesting to discuss from someone who's actually living the life, let's say. As you say, we're not living that life. But it's interesting to, and of course, a lot of trans people, like Foz, we weren't talking about trans stuff, you know, with him.
Right.
It's just something that we just want to talk about stuff
yeah.
with people, you know, whether they're trans or not.
That's a great point. Yeah.
But it's definitely interesting to see what the sort of, what the burning tip of the spear, when it's coming right at you, if you're one of the trans people, what that feels like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, it's an important perspective.
So, you know, we have a friend, a member of the Clojure community who is a trans woman. And so we'll have her on to talk about, you know, her experiences. And she makes it very clear that when you talk about the trans community, they are not a monolithic group who have a singular way of thinking about things. So she's really emphasizing, hey, this is my experience I'm talking about. I think through this conversation, you know, I hope some of our audience members who are trans themselves will resonate with some of these things. And then for, you know, kind of cis men like ourselves or cis women, I also hope that we're going to pick up things from that conversation that we can apply in our, you know, so we can kind of stand in solidarity with our trans friends. So then, you know, I mentioned before when we were talking about LLMs in general, we do want to dive into the technology because people talk about AI. And you and I pointed out in season one that AI is just a marketing term. There are a lot of different technologies under that umbrella. So we want to talk to a computer scientist and an expert in data and machine learning and just to explain to our listeners, you know, in technical terms, but hopefully kind of popular science, if you will, how LLMs actually work so that you can get an understanding, audience members can get an understanding of what they can and cannot do by their very nature. So that's another conversation I'm looking forward to. And, you know, speaking of perspectives, Ray, like, as you said, we want to talk to people, but this conversation, I believe, is really important because the computer scientist we're talking to is a Black woman who is an academic. And white men do kind of dominate the field of computer science. So we wanted to bring somebody who had a different lived experience and could bring that different perspective.
There's a very common concept, especially among white people, to say that you're colorblind or that you're blind to anything. And usually it's a lie.
Bullshit, yeah.
Or bullshit. It's a way of flattening things. It's a way of kind of basically flattening all experience. It's a way of shutting down conversations that are needed, I would say. And we don't want to do that. What we want to do is we want people to be themselves in all their aspects. And the fact, like you say, they have these other experiences is a very interesting addition to the conversation. And it helps our audience and helps us to understand a broader set of perspectives.
Absolutely.
And not to flatten this shit out, basically.
Yeah. So we started off the season, or we will start off the season. Our next episode is going to be about hate. And you and I attended a kind of conference last fall called Manifiesta in Belgium. And one of the speakers there, she was in a panel discussion about care work and the kind of overrepresentation of women in care work. And then she gave a separate talk on the work of Alexandra Kollontai, who is this kind of early socialist women's rights activist who was in a position of power in the early Soviet Union and did a lot of radical things, such as introducing paid maternity leave for women and the right to a no-fault divorce and all of these things. Mm. And this is in what? 1918, thereabouts, so well over 100 years ago. And one of the interesting things she talked about there was the idea of love and how capitalism is trying to commodify love. So she wrote an interesting paper called The Political Economy of Love and Capitalism, which I came across a couple months ago. And the point that Kristen Godsey, makes in this paper is that love requires three things: attention, affection, and this thing she calls reciprocal flow. Reciprocal flow is defined as a natural cycle of giving and receiving. Mm-hmm. And the argument she forwards is that capitalism can easily commodify the first two, but the third, reciprocal flow, resists the market. And that's why our economic system is so determined to destroy it. And I think chatbots they're either trying to commodify this idea of reciprocal flow because people feel like they're in this conversation with a machine, or it's an attempt to just destroy the concept of reciprocal flow. So we'll be engaging with that paper in one form or another, you know, whether we can actually have a conversation with Dr. Godsey or whether you and I just talk about these ideas of love. I do think it's really important to kind of bookend, you know, since we talked about hate, I think talking about love is also going to be a really interesting conversation to have.
Yes.
Right. We said at the beginning that one thing that we're trying to do in this show is talk about, okay, so this hellish AI is terrible. Not only what can we do to resist that, but like what all are the alternatives? And so we have a really interesting conversation with another academic named Dr. Dan McQuillan, and he has put out this idea of decomputing. And this is kind of a response to the degrowth discourse in academia. And so Dan doesn't have a kind of complete theory of here's what we do, but he's put this out as kind of a, let's attract thinkers to work through the idea of decomputing. So what would it look like to, you know, to not throw out computing as a whole, because, you know, you and I are technologists and we do believe that computing does have some positive applications, you know, so ways that can be deployed to actually benefit humanity. So Dan is working through, okay, like how could we kind of maintain the positive uses of computing, but then scale down and hopefully eliminate these, you know, well, obviously eliminate the harmful applications of computing, but just get rid of these things that are just fluff that no one needs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a challenging phrase, but a lot of the people we've talked about are sort of bringing threads together in this series. And this is very similar. When we were talking last season with Chris Gilliard, we were talking about essentially the fact that these technologies are surveillance technologies underneath everything. And the concept of a non-surveilling infrastructure is very attractive to me.
Yeah.
And I think one of the thrusts of decomputing is to dismantle the mechanisms of surveillance. I think that to me is a central way of how we get out of hell. Realize that we're being surveilled, realize that there are ways to stop this. And the surveillance essentially is the fodder for the hellish AI and hellish computing landscape that we have. So I'm very much interested in how we essentially destroy the fundamentals of that system.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of that, the final episode of the season that we're going to have is with none other than Paris Marx. Paris is the host of the Tech Won't Save Us podcast. And one of the things that Paris did last year is put out, and I think this was like right around Christmas last year, maybe, but Paris wrote this guide to getting off of US tech. As you just said, you know, we have these big platforms, Google, Facebook, Twitter, all of these things that really are surveillance mechanisms, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that they offer ostensibly useful services to their users is kind of beside the point. The point is to hoover up data and use that data at best just to sell advertising to us, but at worst to sell that data to data brokers, to turn that data over to fascist governments like the Trump regime in the US right now. So one of the things Paris did in that guide, which is a very practical, like here are some of the alternatives to these kind of big tech services. So you and I, for example, use Proton, which is email, and now they have Docs and they have a cloud storage and so on. So Paris walks through all of these kind of alternatives to the big tech things. But then at the end of the guide, one of the points that Paris makes is that, okay, so getting off of big tech is kind of a necessary first step. But if we just move from Google to a European Google clone that is hopefully less evil, but, you know, really what it boils down to is moving to a clone that is run by a company that's less powerful is definitely a thing worth doing, right? Because
yes.
Google can just turn their vast treasure trove of money into political power. So what Paris says is like, this is kind of the first step, but what we really need to do is we need to build a new stack, a stack that is founded on the principles of no surveillance, the principles of social justice, the principles of basically equitably using electricity and water and all of these things. So we will have Paris on the show in our last episode to really walk through what would it look like to build this kind of alternative computing stack. So I think that really follows on well from the conversation we're going to have with Dan.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I feel like this is very much in the air at the moment, which is how do you take on the global hegemon, basically? You know, we've had lots of speeches recently, Mark Carney talking about the rules-based order coming apart. We're seeing a lot of countries realizing that actually having these dependencies on these large American technology companies is a horror show, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, it might be convenient for their citizens, but actually it's a total disaster in terms of their own independence and autonomy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think how this whole thing is navigated as this realization dawns is going to be, you know, a super fascinating thing to watch and to get involved in.
Yeah, definitely. So then we talked about hellish AI, but you didn't stop there, Ray. You operated the pun center of your brain to kind of look at the backronym that is the complement, if you will, to hellish AI, and that is heavenly AI.
Heavenly.
So heavenly, Ray, I'm going to read it out to you in case you've forgotten what you said, but heavenly, the H is for high quality. So clarity over the data, the tokens, the parameters, the weights. Then the E is for ethical curation and purpose. So make sure that we have data that is licensed and representative, tools that support and elevate human endeavors. A, accessible. So not beyond the means of individuals or schools and universities to deploy or build or research. The V is for viable, so meaning that it can be created and operated by individuals and small organizations. E, environmentally sustainable.
Shocker.
shocker. So not using all the power and water and GPUs in the world. I mean, if you've seen the price of RAM recently, Ray, it's unbelievable.
Oh yeah.
N for narrow focus. We can't make any kind of safe AI unless we have a narrow focus to ensure the quality and also the ability to put controls around that. And then L for language model. So are there maybe benefits to this transformer architecture? And this is a very debatable point. So this is something throughout the season we are kind of debating, or sorry, not debating, but we're talking through this with our guests.
Yeah.
And finally, the why is YOLO. You only live once, so you may as well live once well. So heavenly AI, high quality, ethical curation and purpose, accessible, viable, environmentally sustainable, narrow focus, language model, question mark, YOLO.
Yeah, I like YOLO because there's a lot of YOLO coders. And
oh,
so it was my little riff on don't think of YOLO as like
an excuse to do whatever the fuck you want.
Well, as an excuse to just to give up and throw sort of like, yeah, throw your kids down the hill or something. You know, it's just like, that's not YOLO, you know?
Yeah,
YOLO
yeah.
is a reminder of the precious time that we have on this earth.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. So one of the things that we, you know, when we kicked off this show, one of the things that was really important to us is having good faith discussions. And, you know, hopefully we're modeling this on the air with the discussions that we have with each other. I mean, with ourselves, the two of us, but also our guests. But we also want to invite our listeners and the community as a whole in to discuss these things in good faith with us. So is heavenly AI possible? I mean, you and I have our opinions, which are evolving rapidly, but I'm sure our listeners have opinions too. So how can you get involved in this discussion? Well, first of all, you know, have these discussions in your communities where you are. But if you want to get involved directly in the discussions with us, we would love that. So we're on social media. So we're on bluesky@politics.bsky.social. We're on Mastodon at politics@mastodon.social. We are certainly not on fucking Twitter, which I refuse to call X. Fuck all that. So social media, cool. But also, you know, we are really against surveillance. So you can email us. And our email is on ProtonMail, as we said. So if you're emailing us from a Proton account, that is end-to-end encrypted, which is fantastic. We would also love you to, if you want to help out with the production of the show and you want to do some transcription for us, we're also happy to pay you. We can't pay a lot, but we do definitely believe in compensating people for their labor. So let us know if that's something you'd be willing to do. Likewise, if you want to do some audio editing for us, again, we're willing to pay. Or if you're in a position where you want to volunteer some time to this project, reach out. And finally, as we mentioned, we are slowly but surely trying to replace the entire podcast production stack of software with either open source programs or software that we're developing ourselves. So if you are a software developer and you want to get involved in that, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to season two. I didn't think that we'd get to season two because I hoped that season one would be such a torpedo into the face of AI that it would all
the
be over.
The final nail in the coffin, yeah.
Somehow it survived our attack. which is very, very disappointing, but there we are.
Yeah.
Hopefully it can't take the second salvo.
No, exactly. I mean, we have assembled a Luddite army in this one, right? So surely that'll be enough.
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm really looking forward to this series of conversations together with you and together with these amazing people that we have mentioned. So with that, let's sign off for today and invite all of our audience to buckle your seatbelts. We will release the conversation with Anthony Moser Monday, 2 weeks from today, and we will be releasing episodes fortnightly, so every 2 weeks thereafter, and that'll go well into the summer with all of these amazing guests that we have on. So please tune in and please reach out via email or socials or whatever and engage in this conversation with us.
This is that bit at the end where we thank you for listening to this episode of Polytechs. First, we hope you enjoyed the show and we really appreciate the time you've given to this subject. If you want to follow up with us, please send email to podcast@polytechs.dev. because that's very direct and doesn't have any algorithms. If you prefer social media, we're at Polytechs on Blue Sky and at Polytechs at mastodon.social. We're not on Twitter for obvious reasons. To help the show reach a wider audience, please share it with your friends, family, and colleagues. There's nothing as good as a real human recommendation. You can find out more about the show on the website, which is polytechs.dev. As you should expect, there are no cookies or tracking of any kind. All the show notes, transcripts, and contact details are over there. If you want to show a deeper level of commitment, there's also an option to donate. We're passionate about free and open access to the episodes, so there's no obligation and there are no benefits other than a warm feeling in your heart. Finally, we would really appreciate a 5-star review on your podcast platform. Reading positive reviews makes us feel good and can help others find the show and make them feel like it's worth their time. Okay, that's all the admin done, and we hope to see you next week. Bye!